And thanks so much for attending this panel. A couple of notes. The first one is, at the end of this panel, we have to clear the room for what's coming next. And secondly, I've had a whole lot of questions about photographs and sound recording and media recording and people recording from their iPhones. Well, as you know, Stan is an international celebrity, and so, unfortunately, everything will be permitted today. So our guest today is a writer, an editor, actor, producer, and publisher. He's collaborated with artists such as Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, there, cheer your favorites, John Buscema, Gene Colan, and dozens of others. He's created or co-created some of the most iconic characters in pop culture, including Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, the X-Men, the Avengers, Iron Man, the Hulk, Thor, and Willie Lumpkin. Many creators cited him as a major influence, including Federico Fellini, Paul McCartney, and George Lucas. So please join me, give me a big Toronto welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Stan Lee.
I'm so great, I don't know how to turn a microphone.
Should it be attached to something?
Can you hear me?
Hello? I was about to say years ago, if I had known I was so great, I'd have asked for a raise. Anyway, you're very lucky to be here today. Have me cast your words of wisdom at you. I'd like to feel that you're all taking notes. And it's good to be here, but nobody told me what the hell I'm supposed to do or say. So I'm standing here in front of you, totally at a loss, hoping some idea will come to me, saying to myself, what would they like to hear? I have no idea what you'd like to hear. I have no idea if you're just sitting here waiting for the next important panel. Why is there a boom in my voice? Technology, huh? If I wasn't hoarse from having talked so much before, I would put this away and you could hear my dulcet tones without the boom. They've already worn me out, so you're stuck with the boom. Now, unless you want to see a grown man just die in front of you because there's nothing to say, ask me a question, for God's sake.
Stan, I have to start with superheroes. Why are you so attracted to creating superheroes?
I'm not attracted to it. They pay money for it, so I do it. Actually, you wouldn't know this to listen to me. The thing I most like to write is comedy. So very often I'll go to a movie studio, a distributor, and I'll say, hey, I got an idea for a comedy movie for you. And they say, well, does the character fly, or can he punch his hand through walls? I say, no, a comedy. Yeah, well, does he wear a costume? No, I'm talking about a costume. They don't understand. With me, if the guy doesn't have a costume and a superpower, they don't even want to talk to me. In fact, he wouldn't talk to me if not for the suit. In fact, he isn't doing much talking now. I shouldn't have to do all the work. You're the interlocutor. Come on, earn your money. Wait a minute, are you doing it without a mic, or do you have one of those mysterious things pinned to you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, sure, I have to hold this here. Some great way to treat a guest. I think I'm a guest.
Well, that leads me to my next question, which is collaboration. Clearly, you love to collaborate. You love to collaborate. Why is that?
I don't love to collaborate. I'm not an artist. I have to collaborate. I could draw like those guys, you'd never even hear of them. It would all be totally by Stan Lee. But I can't draw the strip. So I take these guys, I teach them how to draw, I make them famous, and what do I get from them?
So can you actually explain that to me, the Marvel method? You're credited with coming up with this new way of writing comics in the mid-60s. Tell me about the Marvel method and why you employed it.
You are good. You remember all this, these questions. You're not even looking at your notes. I wish I could do that. The Marvel method. What happened was, I had to write a lot of books in the early days. I was doing the Fantastic Four and the Hulk and the X-Men and the Spider-Man and so forth. And I think we were still doing some other dumb books and we still had a few monster things and I don't know. So anyway, I was writing just about everything and I couldn't keep up with it. And the artists were freelancers. Now, that means they weren't getting salaries. So if they didn't draw anything, they weren't getting paid because they weren't on salary. I couldn't let a guy like Jack Kirby or Steve Ditko or John Buscema or John Romita or any of them sit around with nothing to do. But if I was writing a script for Kirby, I couldn't be writing Ditko's script at the same time. So he had nothing to draw. So these guys were good at making up their own stories if they had something to start with. So I would say to Ditko, look, I haven't got time to write your script, but here's what I think the story should be. We'll get a villain called the Green Goblin and he'll do this and that, and you come up with some fight scenes, I don't care, and we'll do this and that, I don't know. I left the tough stuff to him. And he would go ahead and just draw whatever he wanted based on what I told him, and I would finish Kirby's story. By the time I was through with Kirby, Ditko had penciled in his whole story, given to me, and I would put in dialogue balloons and captions according to what he had drawn, and I would change the emphasis and add things. But basically, I said, this is a great way to do it. So then I had Colan do that, and I had Gil Kane. I had all the artists. I would just give them the germ of an idea. They would draw it. I could put in the dialogue later, and that way I was able to write all these books pretty much by myself. And it was great. They did the work, I took the credit, and there is no better way to do it. And that was the Marvel method, which really is not, it's not a good way to call it. It's not the right name. It should be the Stan Lee method.
I have to say, Stan, I think you're being a little bit modest. I know modesty.
I tend to be that. I'm the most modest guy you'll. I know. I don't like to talk about myself. I don't like my name to be out in public. I'm a very self-effacing guy. It's my greatest virtue.
Hey, I should just. I'll hold that, Stan. Let me just.
Is
hold that
how it works?
Yeah, I think that.
Oh,
might
you mean
work.
I shouldn't put it down?
No.
Are you going to hold it when I'm talking?
Sure, I can do that.
My voice isn't always this way, but I've been talking for 2 days and I'm losing my voice. He doesn't care.
I want to tell a brief story. In 1965, there was a New York blackout, and all the writers, including Roy Thomas, who told me this story, said they didn't finish their work. And the next day, Stan Lee delivered his pages. And he said to everybody, well, now where's your work? And they said, well, it was a blackout, Stan. And he said, haven't you ever heard of candles? So how hardworking were you? I mean, how many books were you writing every month?
I was so great the way I did it. There was a blackout, but I had those stories to do. So my wife got me a few candles. I lit them, and I typed the story. It was no big deal. These guys just obviously, I didn't pay them enough. They couldn't afford candles. This is fun.
So you've also been praised for the reality in your stories. In fact, you went so far as to put yourself and other comic book artists in the stories. Why did you want to do that?
I've always loved cameos. Actually, I don't know. I told you, I like funny stuff, and I never had a chance to write anything funny, so I thought it was kind of funny to put Kirby and me and anybody else into the stories when least expected, because I couldn't keep using Willie Lumpkin all the time. And I don't know, I just did it for fun, that's all. And also, when you write stuff, the most important thing is to give the reader something he or she doesn't expect. And these little artistic cameos were, I think, and I hope, unexpected.
They were unexpected, and they were delightful, because it made me feel like I was part of the story.
Well, everything I did was delightful. But I don't know.
So tell me, you love cameos, so tell me about your upcoming cameos in the new movies coming out from Marvel Studios. Tell me, Thor, Captain America, and the Avengers.
I can't tell you about Captain America and the Avengers because I haven't spoken to them about it yet. Captain America, they're going to shoot mainly in England because the name of it is Captain America. So But I think if they shoot a few scenes in New York, you might be surprised to see me in that movie. I haven't spoken to anybody about the Avengers yet, so I don't know what the plan is. But Thor, you will see me in Thor, but you will see a new, a different Stanley. I can't tell you more. Oh, I can tell you one thing. You know that new television series that's opening up called Nikita? Have you heard of it? Tomorrow afternoon, I am going to where they're filming it, and I have a cameo in that. I actually have about 15 or 20 words to say, if I can remember them, so that ought to be fun. And getting back to Thor, I have a scene that does not take place in Asgard. And I'm sorry about that, because I kind of hope they cast me as Odin, but, you know, sometimes they can't see the forest for the trees. But I play a truck driver, and that's all, you know, because they needed a guy who was kind of rugged and macho, you know, I wear a cap. Oh, it's great. And I'm not going to tell you any more than that, but what I'm going to do for the truck driving industry.
You missed the cameo. Last week you were in Vancouver. You did a cameo on Eureka.
Oh, that's right. With
Felicia Day. Tell me about that.
Is it running today?
No, they just aired it. They just taped it last week.
I don't know when they're going to air it, but Eureka, which had up until now been, you know, a nice show that people watch, suddenly I'm in it. Need I say more? But what I like about it, it's funny. They gave me a humorous scene. And you, who think I have no sense of humor, are going to be so surprised because I was magnificent in it. You notice how he keeps reaching for this thing before I embarrass everybody even more?
This is my job, to be Stan Lee's mic holder, you know? There are worse jobs in the world. I wanted to ask you, you continue to create. I think this is wonderful. And for Boom Studios, you have three new comic books coming out. Starborn, Soldier Zero, which is a Doctor Who writer called Paul Cornell is going to write. And your great friend Mark Waid is going to do The Traveler. So tell me about creating three new heroes.
Uh-oh, I didn't create them. I have an arrangement with Boom, which I love. It's my favorite kind of arrangement. They do the work, I take the credit. But what it is, they come up with the ideas for the characters, and they did. They're their ideas. But I act as the supervising editor and art director. So they show me what they want to do, and it looks good to me. There's nothing wrong with it, but I want to impress them. So I say, change this, fix that. And, you know, I give them a lot of changes to make, which are probably not as good as the original way they had it, but they listen to me, because what do they know? So I've been writing roughshod? No, that's not. I haven't ridden roughshod. I'm riding herd over them, keeping things under control, making sure that these books are coming out the way I would have wanted to do them. So it's a combination of their talent and my butting in. And I think the books are going to be great. They have great writers, great artists. I did not create them, but you will see my magic touch on every page.
So after this next question, I'm going to open it up for Q&A to you guys.
You mean this next question?
I have one more question.
Oh, you mean from you?
From me.
They
are going to ask questions.
They don't care. They're sitting there waiting for the next. There hasn't been one question. I haven't seen a hand raised. They're
Stan,
not even
Stan,
looking.
In a moment, Stan. In a moment. So my question is, there was just an article in the New York Times. They were talking about the future of comics. What do you think the future of comics is going to be? And isn't it great that the New York Times cares? That's what I would say.
I thought he was going to say, isn't it great that you care? You know, you continually say the wrong thing. I would love to sound profound and impress the hell out of you. I have no more idea what the future of comics is than any of you do. Who knows? I think there will always be comic books because there's something nice about a comic book. You can hold it in your hand and fold back the pages. You can collect them and pile them on a shelf. They don't take up much room. You can put them in your back pocket. You can share them with a friend. You can tear out a page and say, hey, look at this. Hey, you can do whatever you want with a comic book. But we're living in an electronic age and a digital age. More and more, there are comics that you'll see on your TV, on your computer screen, on your damn telephone, on everything. So comics are going to be all over the... We're even at my company, POW. I didn't mention POW. I should have... They'll kill me at POW because I didn't mention POW. I got this new little company called POW Entertainment. And I'm sure you've all figured out already that POW stands for Purveyors of Wonder. And we do movies and television and DVDs and stuff like that. And little comic book things that are a cross between comic books and animation that you'll find again on the internet and wherever else you look. So everything, it's not just comics, the whole world is changing. Newspapers are changing, magazines are changing, advertising. You know, newspapers used to carry classified ads, that thick pages of them. They don't have many anymore because people buy everything from the on their computers. So everything is changing, and comics will too. And I have no more idea where it's heading than anybody does, but... we're living in one of the most exciting ages because of all this digital stuff, and it's really fun. And why am I being so serious? Take this.
Okay, now it's your turn. Okay, well, let me go for somebody in the back. Let me go to you in the hat waving in the air. Yes, sir. I'm going to have to repeat every question just because I'm not sure everybody can hear. Yes, sir.
We all know the characters that you've created. Can you tell us some of the characters you created that never made it?
Oh, great question. We all know about the characters that you created. Can you please tell us about some characters that you created that never made it to print?
Believe it or not, there haven't been any. it's not because I'm so good. It's because I was the editor. So I was the guy who decided what we would print. And I'm my biggest fan. So everything I thought of, I said, hey, that's a great idea. That's the way it works.
It isn't the worst thing about my job, because you're showing that Stan is right, that you guys are way better at my job than I am. So in the red, right there, please.
No, you do a good job. Despite all the terrible things I said, you do a great job.
Yes, sir. So if you could have three special powers, Stan, three, I feel like a genie here. What three special powers would you choose?
I'd love the power to hold sway over an audience. I'd love the power to be as articulate and meaningful as Mark over here. And to me, the most important power, seriously, if you could have a superpower, the power I would want, and perhaps you haven't thought of this, I would want luck. Because if you've got good luck, everything else just follows. Now, I hope nobody here who's in the comic book business is going to run out and do Luck Man before.
So, yes, sir, yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Stan. Just quick, on behalf of everybody, thank you so much for our childhood and for being so positive. Let's hear it for you. Since you've given us so much, Stan, what would be your happiest memory from your childhood?
What would be your happiest memory from your childhood?
All right, I'll be serious a moment. The happiest memory from my childhood, we didn't have much money. And we lived in a little apartment in the Bronx, which faced the rear. I always wished we were rich enough to have an apartment that faced the street so we could see what was going on, but we always faced a brick wall. And we never had a car or anything like that. But one day, I must have been about 11 or 12, my parents got some of their money together and they bought me a bicycle, a two-wheel bicycle. And I think that was my happiest moment as a kid, because suddenly I was free to go anywhere I wanted in the city. I could ride that two-wheeler. I didn't need money for a subway or for a bus. And of all the things that stick in my mind, it's like Citizen Kane with Rosebud, with me and with my bicycle.
Thank you very much for that answer and for that question. Thank you, sir. That was great. Okay, you in the purple, please.
How did you create Iron Man?
How did you create Iron Man?
Brilliantly. I never know how to answer a how did you create question, because you just think of it, and when you're thinking of it, you're not making a note on how you thought of it. But what I had in mind, what I wanted to do, was get somebody who was like Howard Hughes, and I thought it would be fun, because at that time, I don't know, there was the Vietnam War or the Korean War, one of the wars was going on, and most young readers were violently opposed to war, to the military establishment, to munitions, to anything that had to do with violence like that. I thought it would be fun to get a guy who made his money by selling munitions and still make the readers like him. If I could accomplish that, that would really be something. So I think it was a little challenge to myself just to be interested. I'll tell you a funny thing about Iron Man. Of all the fan mail we got for all our characters, Spider-Man, the Hulk, the X-Men, on and on, we got more fan mail from females for Iron Man than any other character. Now, some sociologists among you could give that a lot of thought and try to figure out why. I don't know why, but I thought that's something that tonight when you go home, instead of wondering what you're going to think about, this could give you food for thought.
a female question, then. Perfect.
Hi. What was the first inspirational spark that gave you interest in drawing comic characters?
What was the first inspirational spark that gave you to do comic book characters?
Greed. I had gotten this job at a company. The company was called Magazine Management Company, and they published a lot of different magazines. They published movie magazines, confession magazines, and comic books. I applied for a job. I didn't know they had an opening in the comic book department. It was the last thing on my mind. I thought I'd be a magazine writer. But they threw me in with Jack Kirby and Joe Simon and said, you can help them in the comic book department. So I realized after a while, the only way to make any money at this is to write some stories. So as I say, I was propelled by greed. By the way, you said a female question. Now, did you mean a question from a female or a specific type of question that only a female would ask? Because I don't want to feel that you're sexist, that you feel just because a female asks a question, it becomes a female question. It could have just been a question like if a male had asked. So I want you to give these things a little more consideration.
At heart a writer, and words matter to you a great deal. Do you have a favorite word? The whole room knows what I'm going for here, Stan.
Oh, you mean Excelsior. I swear I would not have thought of that if he had said what he did. Who is a favorite word? No, I'll tell you the story of Excelsior, which you probably don't really care to hear, but since you mentioned it. I used to write this soapbox column at Marvel, and I would end by saying things like "enough said," or "face front," or "hand loose," or whatever I thought of, whatever stupid saying I could think of. And I noticed that the competitive comic magazines would start using those expressions also, and that bothered me. So I thought, I've got to think of some closing expression that they won't copy for two reasons. One, they won't know how to spell it. And two, they won't know what it means. So I came up with Excelsior, which is a word that's on the great seal of the state of New York. And it means upward and onward to greater glory, which of course exemplifies Marvel Comics. Now the funny thing about that, today they use bubble wrap, but years ago, if you mailed something fragile in a package, you'd put a lot of what looks like sawdust in the package so the thing wouldn't get broken. And that stuff was called Excelsior. So you don't know how many letters I would get from fans. Why do you end your essay with a word that means the stuff you put in packages so things don't get broken? And I had to tell them to go to the dictionary, and upward and onward to greater glory is the second definition. And if you don't have a big dictionary, it only says the stuff you pack packages with. And people think I'm crazy. So if people ever talk to you about it, please be sure they buy a big dictionary.
Okay, let me go. You, sir. In the green, right? Lift your hand up. Or you, that's you, yeah. Of all your creations, which creation reflects you the best at the time?
See, I'll get to that, but what I was thinking, I was watching Mark. Do you know what a feeling of power it must give you? You're standing up here, people are raising their hands, and you determine whom you're going to call on. Will it be you? No. Will it be no. I'll call on that one. Boy, I want to tell you. What was the question?
Stan, of all your creations, at the time that you created it, what creation best reflected you or your ideals?
Well, whichever character is the smartest, the best looking, the most charming, personable, intelligent, witty, lovable, sexy, it's not for me to say which embodied all those characters.
Millie the Model!
Millie the Model, somebody said.
You know, I loved writing Millie the Model. That was the fastest. I could write 10 Millies to every one Fantastic Four. And, which is not what the question was. I think a little bit of me is in all of them. I think I have Peter Parker's great sense of responsibility. I have Reed Richards' great intellect. I have
Thor's physique.
Thor's physique.
Thor's physique. Well, that goes without saying.
I don't know. Okay, you, sir.
Sir, do you have any memories or anecdotes to share about Joe Manili?
Ah,
say it for the back of the room.
I'm going to. This is a great question. Do you have any remembrances or any great stories about an artist called Joe Manili?
Oh, Joe Manili. Those of you who don't know him, Joe Manili was one of the greatest, if not the greatest. He did he had a book called The Black Knight that he drew for me. I wrote the stories. It was the most beautiful artwork. He also did little horror stories. He did action stories. He did Western stories. The reason a lot of you haven't heard of him, unfortunately, when he was young, he lived in New Jersey and he would commute to New York. He had bought me a job in New York, a beautiful job, and then he was going back home to New Jersey, and Joe liked to drink. And I think he may have had one drink too many, and he was standing on the platform between two cars and a train, and he fell off and he was killed. And it was a very tragic thing, and not only was it tragic because of his family and him and everything, but it was tragic, I think, for the whole creative world, because Joe Manili would have been a name that ranked with the top names ever in comics. This guy drew faster than Jack Kirby. He almost didn't even pencil anything first. He would take a pen and start drawing, and in 1 minute the panel was done, and it was wonderful. If you ever get a chance, try to find some old comics drawn by Joe Manili. You'll really enjoy looking at them. And anyway, that was my friend Joe, and we just lost him too soon.
Thank you.
There's some water there.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much for the question. Right there in the red? Yes, you. Was Spider-Man the first character that you created?
Oh, no. I started creating characters in 1940, 41, most of whom you've never heard of because they didn't last too long. And because I had to create them the way my publisher wanted me to, and they were pretty corny. But the first of the Marvel characters I created was the Fantastic Four. I'm not sure of the order. Then I think I did the Hulk and the X-Men, and I think that Spider-Man came after one of those. Hey, how do you think I can't be serious? Huh?
Are you in the hat? What made you want to do a collaboration with a manga artist?
Once again, greed. No, actually, I like to do anything new and different and challenging. And it's very easy to appeal to my vanity. When this artist said that he was a fan of mine and would like to do a story with me, I couldn't say no. And he was very good, and we did this manga book called Ultimo. And it surprises me. The thing became a bestseller in Japan, and now they're publishing it in English. There are American versions here. And I try to read it. It's hard for me to understand a little bit, but it's really doing great, and the art is so unusual, and we're also doing, speaking of Japan, we're also doing an animated cartoon called Hero Man. And I think that's doing very well in Japan, and I think it's going to come over here. So when you see Hero Man as an animated cartoon, I want you to think of the Hero Man who's standing up here talking to you.
The question is, are you coming back to Toronto next year?
After the way I've been acting here now, what are the odds I'll be invited here? I love Toronto. My sister-in-law used to live here, and I used to visit her often. It's a great city. The people are great. You wouldn't know it by you people. And if I get a chance, of course I will.
Okay. So just one more question, and I'm going to go to this very eager person there. Yes?
When I come to these cons, all the artists give other artists
advice on how to break into the business from one writer to another? How do I become a writer, for Marvel?
Okay, brilliant question. At a con like this, so many artists give advice to other artists about how they can break in and become an artist for Marvel. As a writer, what would you give a writer? What advice would you give a writer for breaking in to write for Marvel?
Whew. That is difficult. Years ago, it was a lot easier, but now everybody wants to write for Marvel. And when I say everybody, I mean first-rate novelists like Stephen King, screenwriters, television writers, because everybody figures, I'll do a good magazine story for Marvel. They may make a movie out of it, and it'll be great for me. So you're going to be competing with the top writers in the country. And the best advice I would give is don't try to become a comic book writer. Try to become a great writer. Whether you write novels or stories for magazines or television series or what, try to make a little rep for yourself in some other field as a writer. Then you take your published work and you bring it to a Marvel editor and you say, hey, this is who I am. Look what I've done. And that'll probably impress him or her and you may get a shot. But if you're just a guy who comes out of nowhere and says, here's an idea I have for a comic book, the chances are you won't get anywhere because there's too much competition. So, you know, I'm giving it to you as straight as I can. You almost have to make a name for yourself as a writer first in another field, and that really gets your foot in the door at Marvel or almost any comic, any big comic book company. I'm sorry you're making me end up in a serious book.
But please, everybody, join me in thanking Stan for his words of wisdom and advice.